afternoon it is, and I want to welcome listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 293-3914, or if you would like, you can stop down to the shop at 2031 Dryden Road, right across from DP&L, and stop in and talk with our staff, and we'd be more than glad to help you with any of your firearms-related interests. If you'd like to get on the show today, be sure to give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'll get you on the board and in the queue as quick as we can. I want to start today's show off, and I just want to kind of reiterate some of the issues that we talked about last week. I had mentioned that there were several articles in the last Saturday's Dayton Daily News that were particularly interesting and relevant to many of the topics that we've discussed recently. But in particular, they had an article where they mentioned that about 80 to 90% of the sample of population that they surveyed, and it was fairly reputable survey company that ran the survey, favored universal background checks, whatever those are. And those aren't really defined, but there's a lot of people throwing that phrase around, implying that it means something more than it is. And in essence, if they're talking about universal background checks, I think they say that everybody, regardless of the circumstance, should have to undergo a background check in order to sell or purchase a gun, particularly to purchase a gun. And the way things go now, if an individual comes into my shop, I'm a licensed federal firearms dealer, I'm required to run a background check on that individual before I can make a transaction and sell them a firearm. However, when a person goes to the gun show and they happen to go to someone who's not an FFL holder, a federally licensed firearms dealer, they do not have to undergo a background check, and all the individual is required to do is take reasonable steps to ensure that the individual is authorized to have a gun, which there's not a whole lot that person can do because of the limitations on the access to the information and databases that they'd be able to get information from. And then the other category is when just you decide to sell a gun to your neighbor, and again, basically all you're required to do is take reasonable steps to ensure that he's authorized to have a gun, but because you also have limited access to the centralized databases, it's difficult for you to do that. But in last week's paper, I made mention of the fact that, let's assume for sake of argument, that they passed and implemented the universal background checks before last Saturday, and they were in place. There were three incidents that I mentioned, the Dayton police officer who stopped a stolen vehicle, and the 17-year-old got out of the car holding a pistol and had to be shot because he refused to comply with the law enforcement officer's demands to drop the gun. The second incident was the tragic incident down in Georgia where a 14 and 17-year-old thugs attempted to rob a young adult female who was pushing her baby in a stroller, and when she didn't give them what they wanted, they shot the baby, killed the baby, and shot her. I don't know if she died or not, but nonetheless, they shot her. And then the third incident we reported was that the individual apparently who is the lead suspect in the slaying of the Department of Corrections in Colorado's warden was apparently apprehended in a shootout, and I believe he might have been shot and killed in the shootout. And they have some information there where he was a parolee who had obviously been released after serving many years in the Department of Corrections, and he's also the lead suspect in the killing of a prosecutor at the end of January. And the point I wanted to make was the universal background checks would not have had an effect on any of those incidents, not a single one of them, as is the case in the majority of criminal acts. One other thing that just this week we got information about the Colorado incident was that it was the individual's girlfriend who apparently conducted a straw purchase or somehow acquired the gun and then gave him the gun, I would assume knowing that he was not authorized to have the firearm. But nonetheless, it was someone else other than him that actually got access to the gun. So when these people talk about universal background checks, I remember when they started first throwing their proposals around about banning assault weapons, again, and they don't understand what assault weapons are, what that actually means, or high capacity magazines and universal background checks and other provisions that they were talking about. The background checks were, at least to me, the one that had the most likelihood of making it at least into an educated discussion. The problem is you can't get very far with the discussion of universal background checks because you've got to take great steps to improve the reporting process of mental health information on individuals. And because of the various restrictions on HIPAA and personal privacy and things of that nature, it's extremely difficult for that to happen. So they've got a long way to go before the concept of universal background checks will really even have any significant teeth to it for us to even have an educated discussion. Because as of right now, they lead you to believe when they say universal background check that if we do this, we're going to stop criminal activity. I just showed you in one day's reporting of the news that it would have had absolutely zero effect on any of the violent crime matters. And there's a couple of other commentaries in today's paper. And again, the people are relying on lack of information, because I look at some of the things that E.J. Dionne writes in his column and the kind of the theme of the Mike Peters comic today. They're clueless. They just don't get it. They don't understand what actually is involved and how the process works. They make assumptions. They're wrong assumptions. Many people that are anti-gun don't challenge them because they don't know anything. They don't know any better either. They think that those things are going to happen. In the Mike Peters comic today, there's an assumption there that we've already had 3,000 killings since Newtown. Well, even though, as Mark and I discussed before the show, that's probably on the high end of the average. When you look at between 10 and 14,000 homicides a year, the majority of them being with firearms, that's pretty consistent. Here we are at the end of the first quarter of 2013, and we're running about the same number of homicides that we've run for many years, which, by the way, is lower than it was in the 90s. Is lower when you look at the rate than it was from 1990 to the year 2000. And we've had repeated decreases in violent crime for at least the last 3 or 4 years running, as we've reported on several previous shows after we've referenced the FBI Uniform Crime Report. So there's a lot of misinformation. And I just want to encourage people to kind of take it like a grain of salt. We told you way back in January that the emotion of what happened in Newtown was going to subside and rational minds were going to prevail. And let's just wait and see how things are playing out. And for the anti-gun people are hanging on by strings right now. They're desperately hanging on. They're trying. They mentioned the great efforts of Mayor Bloomberg and his cronies up in
Mayors Against Illegal Guns.
And again, they're making desperate measures. Let him waste his money. He's wasting his money because he's fighting an uphill battle. Yeah, money talks to a certain degree, but rational minds are prevailing when it comes down. Even in his own state, after Governor Cuomo overreacted and implemented some pretty rigorous legislation in the last month or last 2 weeks, he said, well, you know, even though we're moving that direction, we don't know if it's going to be able to be enforced. So we don't know if it's going to do any good anyway. So they went through all those steps. They got everybody up at arms, literally and figuratively. And then they went ahead and now they're admitting that it's going to be difficult, if not impossible, to enforce.
Well, and it was pushed through so quickly and with such haste that there were a lot of things that they discovered in it that they're already having to fix. And that just proves the point that they didn't really know what they were doing. They didn't have a good plan. It wasn't something that was carefully considered. It was done in haste with an emotional driver behind it instead of actually looking at the facts and finding out what can we do that would really work. And unfortunately, that's been the problem with most of these situations, is that they really haven't studied what will work. They don't know and they don't care really what will work. They're looking for a political advantage. And Dianne Feinstein, Senator Feinstein from California, has put this thing together and has many times throughout her career threatened various types of gun control. And as Rahm Emanuel stated, you know, a long time ago, you know, we never want to let a good crisis go to waste. And that is clearly what they're trying to do right now, is use the emotions that were generated by the tragedy at Sandy Hook, which was horrible. And it was absolutely something that we need to deal with. But the problem is, they're not ready to deal with the real question as, how do I stop something like this from happening? That, and the problem with that question is it requires understanding that you cannot prevent 100% of these things from happening. You can only stop them. If somebody has it in their mind that they are going to do whatever it is, evil thing that they have in that they plan to do, you can't necessarily know enough about it in advance to prevent it, but you can be prepared to stop it when it occurs. And by doing so, you minimize the number of people that get injured. You minimize the risk to the people who are there who are not armed and are not prepared to deal with the situation. If you have someone who is prepared, willing, and trained and equipped to deal with the situation immediately and to stop the bad things from happening.
You know, and right along those lines, there was a headline in this last week's Dayton Daily News about districts, school districts in the area boosting security after school shootings. But I'm just going to tell you, I don't know if the right term is, those are just kind of Band-Aid fixes to the problem, because I didn't see anybody speaking out in favor of armed personnel in the schools to help mitigate against such crises. They're doing lots of good things by rehearsing their lockdown drills and those sorts of things. But again, that's not going to stop what happened and what continues to happen across this country when crazed gunmen go about doing their dirty deeds. It's only going to take the heroic acts of ready, willing, and capable on-the-scene individuals that are going to put an end to the violence and minimize the pain, because some of these others are just Band-Aid fixes to the problem, and they just don't want to carry the conversation to where it needs to go. It's going to evolve. I've told you on this show many times, we're evolving to that situation where we're going to move to where that's going to have to become commonplace. And you as citizens, you as parents should demand it. You should demand that schools take appropriate measures. And that means armed personnel, whatever we end up coming up with as far as who's going to constitute the people that are going to serve in that capacity, whether it's trained and ready, willing, and capable staff members or volunteer parents or whatever the case might be, we need to demand that, because that's the only way we're going to ensure that incidents like this get resolved in a short period once they evolve. So there's lots of things that we can discuss, and I want to hear what your thoughts are, because these are issues that you should be milling around in your mind. And I'm sure you have. And we want to provide you the forum in order to get some of your thoughts out on the air and create some very hearty dialogue. And if you disagree with us, by all means, call us, 457-1290. We want to encourage that hearty debate. And we'll give you a chance to state your opinion and to substantiate and back what you have to say. We'll counter and we'll engage in healthy dialogue. And I think that's going to be great for this issue as well as other issues that come up relevant to the topic.
One of the other things that we want to talk about, and we'll do that a little bit later, is to talk about the changes that went into effect in Ohio law as a result of House Bill 495. Those changes went into effect last Wednesday on the 27th. And it does change some things for those who have license to carry concealed handgun. It also changes things for people who do not have a license. So we'll discuss those things as well, and we'll take your calls at 457-1290. We need to take our first break for the hour right now, so if you'd like to be part of the show, you can call the show, again, at 457-1290. And we've already got Jack waiting on the phone, and we'll get him after the break. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. And let's go out to the phones. We'll talk to Jack, who's called in from Butler Township. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Along with what you're talking about, stupid laws, I was just wondering if the states that are going to limit magazine capacity will require the carryout 7-Eleven stop and goes to post a sign on the door that says, if you are robbing this store, you're not allowed to have more than 7 rounds in your magazine.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great idea. Whether they require it or not, the stores should, you know, put up signs like that, especially those that, you know, that actually promote and recommend and understand the reason why good people ought to be armed. They're obviously not going to do that, as much as we would appreciate that. But
just another stupid law.
Yeah, it really is. It's the whole magazine capacity thing. There was a situation or an interview, a discussion with Piers Morgan on his show this last week that was, again, went viral. Every time he makes a fool of himself, the gun community sends it and it goes viral. But it's just one of these things where he completely doesn't understand the difference between a magazine capacity and some sort of measure of lethality. If somebody has a gun, if it has a magazine, it doesn't matter what the magazine capacity is. You can reload it fast enough that it really doesn't matter. It's how many magazines that you have. And then they might say, well, we're going to try and limit the number of magazines someone can have. And that's just as ridiculous. You can't do that.
Well, the argument that's even simpler than that is that they just fail to recognize the fact that a criminal, by definition, is someone who doesn't obey the law. So I keep mentioning that. I know we've talked about it time and time again, but the people who advocate decreasing magazine capacity have no concept of what criminals do when they engage in criminal acts. They don't pay any attention to the provisions of any law. Doesn't matter if it's a newly enacted law, an old law, a federal law, a state law, a local ordinance, whatever the case is, they just do what they want to do with whatever they want to do it with, and there's no consideration whatsoever. So it's kind of multi-tiered, ridiculous analogy.
Stupid squared.
Yes.
Thank you.
Jack, thanks very much for calling the show. One of the things that we talked about just before the break were the changes that went into effect on Wednesday, on the 27th of March, regarding several aspects of Ohio concealed carry law and just firearms law in general. And I'd like to go over those a little bit. There's actually a pretty decent article that Ken Hansen and Sean Maloney put up on the Buckeye Firearms Association website. I'm glad they did that. It makes it real easy for me to reference and saves me from having to write that as well. The bill went into effect again last Wednesday, and there are three major changes. One of them changes where you can park and that you can have your firearm stored legally in your vehicle in a state-owned parking garage, such as the one under the State House. That's convenient for people who have to go to the State House and don't want to be disarmed in the meantime. There were several of the legislators who have licenses to carry concealed handgun, and they weren't able to even carry to the State House. So that benefits them. The second one is that it eliminated the demonstrated competency requirement for your second renewal for a concealed handgun license. And we've talked about that a little bit. That is no longer required. So if you have not yet had your second renewal and you're in the process of having to do that, you do not need a competency demonstration. So we've done several of those. We think that training is still a good thing. You may want to get our legal update to find out more details about the laws and so forth, some of the things that have changed. But the certificate is no longer required for
That's another point that I'd like to hear from our listeners about. I want to hear your comments about what you think about doing away with the requirement for demonstrating a competency for renewal. Because I have mentioned several times on this show that I was very much in favor of that. Mark has different opinion about it, and we kind of agree on the fact that the training is critical. But I'm sure you have your opinions. Some of you may not have even known it because we've had several people call wanting to set up an appointment with us saying that their license expires in June and they want to be able to demonstrate competency. And we've had to tell them that as a result of the passage and implementation of this current law that it's no longer required.
And then the last change that went into effect was a change in the definition of unloaded with respect to transport in a motor vehicle. And I'm not going to have time to do that before we go into the news, but I will cover that when we get back and give you a little bit more detail on what that means. There's an awful lot of misunderstanding about what unloaded means and how you need to transport your firearm in the motor vehicle, and we'll cover that. So come back after the news. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip, and we're glad to have you with us today. Shooting from the Hip is a program of Sim Trainer, Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center, and we would love to have you find out more about that. If you are looking to maybe get started in the firearms world, get a little bit of training, maybe purchase a firearm, we recommend doing it in that order first. Get the training first and then figure out what gun you're going to buy. But there's a great place to do that down at Sim Trainer. You can find more information about that at sim-trainer.com. That's S-I-M as in simulation-trainer.com. And you can also call the range at 293-3914, and our staff will be happy to answer any questions for you. You also can find out more information at the website about the classes. We have a class schedule down there. We have an email list if you'd be interested in that. Plus, if you're new to the show, we also have a show page on the website, sim-trainer.com/radio, where you can find previous shows and links to our Facebook page and also the podcast. So we'd love to have you come out there and be part of that as well. One of the things that we were just talking about before the news at the bottom of the hour, we're talking about the definition of unloaded that changed with House Bill 495 last Wednesday. Now, there's a lot of misunderstanding about unloaded in Ohio because for a long time, there was a requirement that you not have ammunition, quote, ready at hand. And that wasn't very well defined, and it was kind of an ambiguous way to decide that, you know, ammunition isn't, quote, close enough to the gun. So people would do things like take their ammunition and put it in the glove box, put their glove in the trunk, and hope that the two would not be considered ready at hand. Well, that was no longer required back in September of 2008. The law changed. Ready at hand is no longer a part of it. And the definition at that point then became that you could not have any ammunition in the gun, and you could not have any ammunition in any magazine or speed loader that could be used with that gun. So that was a much more definitized definition. It was much clearer. There was a bright line that said this is appropriate and this is not appropriate. But a lot of people didn't like that, because not having any loaded magazine in the vehicle means that if you have loaded magazines in the glove box and you have a gun that it can be used with in the trunk, then you have a loaded gun, even though they're clearly not, by the any common sense definition, loaded. So in House Bill 495, that has changed. And now we have a definition of unloaded that is much more like what most people think of as the gun being unloaded. The first piece is that there can still be no ammunition in the firearm. That's pretty clear. That's the common understanding of definition of unloaded. And then you could possibly have a magazine that's loaded. If it's not loaded, then you're good to go. You can have the unloaded magazine or speed loader for use with a revolver, the firearm, and the ammunition all in the same bag and no problem, and that would be meeting the definition of unloaded if the magazine is unloaded. Now, the other thing is, if the magazine is loaded or speed loader and it's in a compartment that's reachable only by leaving the vehicle, then that also is considered unloaded. Then the third way is that, and this is one that's really going to be a lot of help for most people, if the magazine or speed loader is in a closed package box or case that has multiple compartments, or they're in separate cases, as long as the magazine and the speed loader is in a separate compartment of the closed package and there is some sort of a close for it. So if it had a zipper, if it had a snap, if you had Velcro, which the generic term for that is a hook and loop fastener. So if you've got a flap that closes and it seals closed in some ways, then the magazine is in that and it's separated from the firearm. Or if the firearm is in a compartment that has a close. So if the firearm itself has a separate zippered compartment, and then you have your magazines in that same case, but outside that zippered compartment, maybe in elastic loops that hold them securely, that would also meet the definition of unloaded. And then finally, if the magazine is on your person and it's in a pocket that has a closure, like a cargo pants that has a snap, a zipper, or Velcro, I've got the pair I have on right now has Velcro closures, then that magazine is also considered not loaded for the formal definition. So there's a lot more and more convenient ways for you to transport a loaded magazine along with the firearm and not have the firearm be loaded. We're coming up on the summer and not too a distant future, and a lot of people like to go out and shoot their long guns, for example. The definition applies to long guns, handguns, shotguns, all firearms that have a magazine or speed loaders possible for them. These definitions apply to all of those. So if you're going to go out to the outdoor shooting range and you don't want to spend 15 or 20 minutes loading magazines while you're out in the heat, and you want to do that before you leave the house in your nice air-conditioned place, then you can do that as long as you transport those magazines not in the firearm and in a case that has a separate compartment for the firearm and the magazines in there, and there's a good close. So I think that's going to be a big improvement. Now, there's one other condition. If you do have a concealed handgun license, then if you're carrying pursuant to that license, obviously your handgun can be loaded. But beyond that, your long gun is considered unloaded as long as there is no magazine in the gun that has ammunition in it. So for that, if you already have gone through that background check process and you have a valid license to carry concealed handgun, all of those other requirements for separate closures and so forth don't apply to you. So you could have the firearm, the loaded magazines, and all that stuff just loaded in a bag, and you're good to go if you have a license to carry concealed handgun. So those are the major changes that went into effect last Wednesday. And I'm sure we'll get a lot more questions about that, because it is a fairly complicated definition of unloaded, but it's a lot better definition than we had in the past. Let's go back out to the phones, and we'll talk to Howard, who's called in from Camden. Howard, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. I ran into an interesting little situation last week. I kept an appointment with my local sheriff to renew a concealed handgun license. Oh, and by the way, anyone thinking of getting a concealed handgun license or renewing one, be sure to contact your sheriff's department. Many of them require an appointment to do this. But in any case, I'm older. I'm 75 years old. And with many older people, including me, your fingerprints kind of go away. So when I went to renew my license, part of the procedure, of course, is to be fingerprinted. And we found that the normal electronic means that they use does not work on me. therefore, it had to be done on the, you know, paper and ink type card. And I was informed that it might take as much as 2 months to get this license renewed. So I just want to give everybody a heads up. If you have any kind of problem with your fingerprints, you might want to check in early to be sure you get this done in a timely manner.
I'm curious to find out, did they give you an extension because of this extenuating circumstance?
Pardon?
On your current license, did they give you an extension on your current license or give you at least a temporary license for this interim?
No, they did not.
They did not. So you're going to expire?
Now, I can do something I don't like to do. I can carry on my Florida license.
Oh, I see.
I see.
Yeah.
I do not like to do that. I certainly wish that Ohio would recognize out-of-state licenses for residents of that state.
We do. Yeah, we do. The Ohio does have reciprocity with Florida, and a Florida license is good in Ohio, even for an Ohio resident or a Florida resident.
Right. I just kind of feel not real comfortable with people getting all these out-of-state licenses as their residents here of Ohio.
Yeah, well,
I would like to see a case where Ohio does recognize a Florida license, but only if that person is a resident of Florida.
There are pushed, and some states do that. Let me go back, though, a little bit to your problem with the fingerprints. And this is a understood, very common problem. In fact, it can happen a lot earlier than your age. One of the things that sometimes you can do to help to prepare for that is to make sure that you're very well hydrated before you go in, like for the last several days prior to going in to get fingerprinted. If you have a lot of, drink a lot of fluids and make sure that you don't drink anything that would be a diuretic, like coffee or any kind of caffeine drink, certain kinds of teas will also cause you to lose fluids. And that helps to plump up the skin a little bit and helps to raise the fingerprints. And the other thing is to use moisturizers and to use external moisturizers and allow that to be absorbed into your skin. And that will also tend to help plump up the fingerprints. But obviously, in your case, since you've been through that process, that's not going to help you this time. But for anybody else that might be listening, that is something that you can do to help make the fingerprints a little bit more readable.
Thank you for that comment and sharing that information with us, because as we've mentioned many times for our listeners, we want to get information on real situations. We know that many of the sheriff's departments are strapped with budgetary restrictions, so they're requiring appointments because they don't have designated people who staff an office 40 hours a week for 5 days during the work week. So they're going to have designated hours because they only have limited personnel to do that.
And the other thing, of course, by taking appointments, that means people don't have to wait as much. They
Yes.
can just come in, they can make their appointment. It makes it actually much more efficient for both the applicants and for the office themselves when they have a limited resource. So, Howard, thanks very much for calling the show.
Thank you.
Okay, one other thing I wanted to mention before we go to the next break was Mark handed me a piece from the National Shooting Sports Foundation indicating that the current administration is abandoning its position on the UN Arms Treaty requiring consensus among the nations. And as we've mentioned several times in recent broadcasts, they realize, I believe, that their efforts here locally or domestically are failing miserably. And now they're going to maybe try an end run and try to push some of the provisions that are spelled out in the United Nations Arms Treaty on the United States. Well, obviously, there's going to be a very significant screening process that we have in our favor, and that's that this has to be approved by the Senate. And the article refers to the fact that they're going to probably make this one of their strong pushes after the next break that I believe it's just started when they resume next month. And they're going to try to talk about some of those provisions. So several of our callers over the last year have expressed some concern about that, and we've said we'd kind of keep an eye on it. And the National Shooting Sports Foundation, the NRA, and various other gun right groups are paying close attention to this issue, and we're going to keep you updated on it. But do you have a comment on
that? Yeah,
it,
let me just to add a little bit of detail, because one of the problems with changing this, it used to be that they would require consensus. In other words, if everybody didn't agree to go forward with a report, then there would not be a formal report. Typically, what that required is that then the reports were pretty thin. They didn't have a whole lot of detail in them. And nothing that was in there was very controversial, because then you couldn't get everybody to agree to it. By allowing them to go back to say that, well, we don't have to achieve consensus in the committee, that makes it much easier for them to get something out of committee. And then it makes it much easier to be passed in the General Assembly. Now, the U.S. could veto it. There doesn't seem to be any any indication that the U.S. is willing to do that. And as Jeff mentioned, it does have to if they came up with a treaty, it would have to be ratified in the Senate. And that's where we still have a pretty much strength there. So it's real important that you contact your senators, Ohio, obviously Senator Brown and Senator Portman. But if you're from some other state, then you need to contact your senators as well and let them know that you do not support any kind of additional restrictions on your right to keep and bear arms. We're going to take our last break for the hour. If you'd like to be part of the show, call the studio at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio WHIO. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. And let's go back out to the phones. We'll talk to Brian, who's calling from Springfield. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I just wanted to speak to one issue about the gun show loophole that a guy alluded to earlier about individuals being able to sell as long as there was reasonable precaution taken. I'm a former FFL license holder, but it was in the state of Pennsylvania, and I'm not sure about the laws in Ohio, but being FFL, I assume it's a federal
law. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah,
if you're an FFL and you're selling a firearm, it doesn't matter where it is. If it's a gun show or if it's at your own store, you still have to go through the background check process. The gun show thing, yeah, absolutely true. The gun show thing only applies when you're...
You were talking about individuals selling
right.
to individuals, and in the state of Pennsylvania, at least, that is illegal. If an individual wants to sell to an individual, they have to take it to an FFL holder and have the paperwork done, the background check done,
okay.
and that even applies at gun shows.
Yeah, and
that's in Pennsylvania, not Ohio. That's in Pennsylvania, not Ohio. There are several other states with similar provisions, but not here in Ohio, and that was one of the issues that's been discussed back and forth.
Brian, thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Sam, who's calling from Xenia. Sam, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
We're doing fine.
I have a question for y'all. I've been carrying a firearm in my vehicle since I was legally able to do so. I'm 24 now. And I was recently ran into some trouble and some confusion with a local law enforcement as to how I was supposed to carry that. They attempted to charge me with unlawful transportation of a firearm and improper CCW, but the vehicle that I was driving, the firearm was unloaded in the glove box, and the magazine was in the trunk.
And the magazine was loaded or not?
It was loaded.
Then they were correct. As long as that was not after Wednesday of this week, they what they said was technically correct.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, as of Wednesday, that changed, and now the definition of unloaded is what I talked about earlier in the show. That means that as long as the gun, the ammunition or the magazine is not in the gun and it's in a compartment that is separate, doesn't have to be a separate vehicle compartment, but it could be like in a gun case where the gun is closed in a zippered compartment and the magazines have a compartment that closes in some way just to keep the two separate closures. You have to open something in order to get to them, and there's something separating the two completely closed. But otherwise, if you had a loaded magazine in your vehicle, anywhere in the vehicle that could be used with that gun, and the gun was in the vehicle, that gun was considered loaded.
Let me just clarify, you are not a CHL holder, is that correct? You don't have a license?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Yeah,
okay, and that is the parameters for carrying without a concealed handgun license. Thanks very much for calling the show. We're out of time. I appreciate everybody listening. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO.